Okay. Then we can start. So the topic today will be risk assessment, mostly inspired from the book chapter, The Digital Sikkerhed and Inferring, and also some more concepts from the other book that is also mentioned in the weekly plan. Okay, so first of all, something which could be interesting also for the lecture, if there was any specific event last week that you could briefly mention here. It might be or not related to the topic, but I'd just like to start the lecture with that. Okay. Good. Snort, drones. Oh, yeah. Okay, thank you. So when it comes to risk and risk assessment, it's not like we shouldn't think that this is really a specific case, this is not related to what we're doing or what we're saying, etc. So it's like, first of all, there could be multiple examples around it. And then we could start from having a social media account. And this could be both on the individual perspective and then, of course, on the organizational or the societal perspective. And in this case, a social media account would allow any of us to express themselves about different issues or post different images and etc. But then what happens if this social media account is accessed by someone who's unauthorized? What would be the consequences then? And that would be, again, first of all, thinking from the individual perspective, and then if you're part of an organization, what would that mean to the organization? If this would be the, let's say, the organization's own page, how would that reflect, and so on and so on. And what we should do, in a sense, in order to avoid this or to, as much as possible, recover from this issue. And the next example could be that we're also using emails and our email account to get updated on everything, to send messages to the other contacts we have. And this could also be, in a sense, vulnerable to any attacks from the outsiders who are trying to get access to our private information, but also a way to get more inside the organization that we represent or to the context related to where we are living and so on and so on. And then further on, the other thing would be ransomware. It's like, again, now it could be individual, but mostly organizations affected from this. And then how should we behave in a sense, or what should we do in order to make sure that whenever there's a case like this, we do not lose much from what we have already, and that we are able to protect whatever is relevant to us. And the common concept here is that we should, as much as possible, make sure to reduce the risk related to all these assets that we have, because in a sense, having a social media account is a certain asset. If you think that you have valuable information there, then of course it's an asset. Emails and email accounts, they're also an asset, not only to the individual, but also the organization. And then, of course, there's the ransomware event, which will try to make everything like this inaccessible, and also that you have to pay to get it back. So whatever we have to protect, it should be about reducing the risk of getting it disclosed, of getting someone else access it. And then this is why we're discussing today. This is what the topic of risk is about in this context. So before starting with more definitions, I would like to first, as maybe is the usual case now, have your own definition on risk. So how would you define risk? You can also write in Norwegian if it's difficult to express in English. So we're talking about the definition of risk or risiko, and then you can, yeah, anything that can be exploited. Okay. So I see that someone is already mentioning certainty, probability, potential chance, yeah, likelihood. This is good. Okay. Yeah, trauma. It's a threat. Board game, yeah, right. That's true. Yeah, let's see. Is there anything else? Chance taken, not protect. Yes, that's also true. Okay. Good, thank you. So, according to the book, there are at least two definitions that we might use in order to understand what should we define as risk? There's the first one, which is the general one, and which maybe also some of you mentioned somehow in these comments. The traditional one, which is related to the definition used from the economics, which is also my background, and other natural sciences. And that, in a sense, expresses risk as a mathematical combination of probability, someone mentioned here, probability, likelihood, and consequence, which is just like multiplying these two in the general sense. So we have the probability of something happening, and then once it happens, what's the consequence of it? But then, of course, we need to have all the proper information for this. So we need to know all the details about what could happen, how probable it is, and then how severe will it be once it's executed, in a sense, right? So as long as we have all this important information, complete, appropriate data on what we are trying to assess, then we can use this concept, and then we can calculate the risk. But this is not always the case. This is just something that every organization wants, but then it's not that easy to achieve. So what we usually have in the social sciences approach, we accept, in a sense, that we cannot have all the information we need for assessing risk. So we should somehow try to deal with this ongoing, incomplete, improper data. And then we can talk about this a bit later again. So on the other side, there's the other definition, which is a bit more comprehensive. And in this case, it's the so-called three-factor model, or the triangle. You can also see the image from the book, where we do have the relationship between these three concepts, which are the asset, the individual or the organizational asset that we are trying to protect, the effect of the of a potential vulnerability within the asset, and how the threat could be materialized towards exploiting that vulnerability for that specific asset. And that's how you have this triangle sort of relationship. And also, in this case, we don't have just the data that we should need in order to calculate everything. So it's a bit larger, it's a bit broader concept than just probability, consequence. It also somehow involves more factors, a bit more thinking behind that. And then it's usually developed in order to assess the risk for those actions or events which are somehow unwanted and also maybe not easy to predict or to explain. So this is also the image that somehow provides the differences between the two approaches. The first one is just multiplying probability and consequence. And the second one is just the triangle, which shows the relationship between the asset, the threat, and the vulnerability. This is taken from the book, and it's in Norwegian. Sorry for those who could not understand this, but then I tried to explain it, so I think it's also understandable somehow. So I also like that someone included the concept of certainty or uncertainty there, because this is also what the topic is about. This is when we talk about how much do we know and how much can we calculate, can we assess from the situation that we are in. And for that part that we don't know, then we have to deal with the so-called uncertainty. And so that's it, like when we have all these different data sources and we don't really have the full information that we need. But that's also when we are trying to, for example, predict what can happen next year or next 5 years or so, or when we are always dealing with something which is constantly evolving or changing. You know, we've had different events, worldwide events in the past few years, which have already changed the way how different organizations or individuals can address these issues. And then this is how it works. So in a sense, we always have to deal with this missing information, with this changing environment, and then that's how we have to deal with uncertainty. And this is mostly about not having all the available background knowledge that we need in order to calculate that formula. And then, of course, while the conditions are changing, there's uncertainty around which part of the events or actions should we prioritize. Like, if we are part of an organization, then should we prioritize the daily activities, the daily business activities, in order to understand that those activities should be the ones with minimal risk? Should we prioritize the worst-case scenarios that usually are not the ones who happen more often, right? But then if they happen once, it's all over. Or should we prioritize any undesirable, unwanted events, which also could not, maybe would not have this high likelihood, high probability, but then there could be consequences after it. And this is which, like, somehow feeds the whole uncertainty part. So it is also very important. And the next important thing should be that we should, as individuals, as part of an organization, we should always be aware that we shouldn't be able to know everything. We cannot know everything. There's always this 5% of error margin, right? There's always this part of a certain problem that we cannot identify, that we don't have the enough background knowledge, but also there's so there are these things that are always changing, and then that's why we need to put uncertainty in the model, and we need to somehow be able to address this in the best way possible. And the next thing here would be that we are not good decision makers, and this is what actually I wanted to say before. We are not good decision makers as long as we don't accept uncertainty. If we say that we know everything, if we say that everything is under control, everything is good, we're good to go, we will do this, we will do that, we are fully clear about everything, then we don't really know the concept about uncertainty. And then, in a sense, it should be a better decision, a more informed decision, if we consider uncertainty. So what could be some questions that we should raise when it comes to understanding if we are dealing with uncertainty or not? First of all, is this event, this phenomenon that we are investigating, understood well enough? So do we know everything about what we're investigating? Do we have all the complete information, all the complete data? then, let's say we don't know everything, so we have to make assumptions. And in that case, are these assumptions based on strong simplifications? So are we, like, in a sense, making everything very simple? And that would then somehow risk getting us a bit outside of the problem itself. Do we have access to all relevant data or experiences from before? For example, I mentioned last week about this playbook. So we have all these logs, all these events happening in the past, and then we can understand from those, and then we can maybe learn what we should do further. Sorry. In this case, it's somehow similar. So do we have this relevant background knowledge? Do we have this experience stored somewhere, or is the team able to share this with each other? And then, since we have a team, and we will also talk a bit about this, is there agreement among these experts part of the process while they are participating in the overall analysis? These are some questions that help to understand the level of uncertainty and how we should deal with that in order to create a more informed decision in the future. So what could be some of the assumptions? First of all, we should understand that we are more and more having interconnected devices, and it should be very difficult to distinguish between what could risk a physical system or a physical environment and what could risk a digital environment separately. So they are more and more interconnected, and we should more and more address them as a single one system overall. Then, of course, we should also understand that there's no such case where one single person should be able to deal with all the risk. It's called risk picture, so risk the whole picture of the organization, of the environment, and then addressing all the different topics. So we need broad expertise for that. We need different people with different background and experiences, and then that's for the better. And of course, we also need involvement from the management side, which is also very important for all these different aspects that we've gone through so far. So we talked that we said it's very important to discuss about the organizational aspects, because it's very important for everyone in the organization to be part of this process. There was this lecture about security culture in the beginning of this of the cybersecurity part, and then it's like also very important there to be dealing and to be discussing with the management. And in this case as well, we should always have the management, top-level management, to strongly involved in the process. Then could be a few more assumptions, which is like, how should we deal with probability? How should we assign probability values to the different events? We said there should be some kind of likelihood for a certain vulnerability, and then a certain threat. If it exploits the vulnerability, there's the consequence calculated later. When we talk about probability, the usual process is like, okay, there's a value between 0 and 1, and then we can assign this value to these different events. And then there's the other approach, which is the so-called knowledge-based probability assessment, which is somehow using Bayesian methods in order to calculate different values coming from different sources, and then having this aggregate score, which should then be allocated to the specific event. But that's, of course, the difference between the moment when you have some data and you assume that the value should be like that, and then the moment when you have lots of data, and then when you are more secure about what the exact value should be, or the range of the exact value anyway. And then the next assumption would be that since we are somehow asking for a broad team expertise, and since we are asking for the management to be involved, then we shouldn't try and put just numbers in this report, in this analysis. What we should is we should also use words to explain better, to make the other side understand more about the situation, and then take the right decision. So in this sense, this is somehow important, that results should not be just put in numbers, but there should be more words than numbers in order to understand what's going on, and then maybe help the discussion further. And then everything that I mentioned so far is also related to this: should we go for the quantitative assessment or the qualitative one? And then this is also involving the discussion about using lots of numbers or using more descriptive reports, or then the amount of information and data that we have could also affect this. The more detailed information we have, the more we are able to do this quantitative assessment. The less data we have, then we should deal with what we have. We should just maybe try to rank these different vulnerabilities or events based on what we are assuming that could be the most severe ones, and then we can just go from that and follow in the next phase. Now, when we're talking about the risk assessment part, we should first try to understand again, or maybe make a few more assumptions, or maybe a few more definitions clear before we go to the function-based risk assessment part. So first of all, we should know what the organization or what we as individuals need to protect, and that's very important. So we should, as mentioned before, we should try to have all the needed information, all the proper information that we need in order to assess how we can better protect it. And then, for example, when we talk about assets, there's this individual again versus organizational perspective or societal perspective at the higher level. So first of all, as individuals, our most important assets are our lives, our health, and then of course the financial aspect of it. And on the organizational aspect, we have the infrastructure that we have built and we own, the information sources that we have, all the kinds of information database that we own, and there's also some part of the reputation there. So as long as the reputation is bad, of course we will maybe risk losing some assets in a sense, and that's of course related. On the other side, when we talk about functions, in the context of this lecture, functions are all those tasks and outputs that an organization is responsible for. So depending on the, let's say, the sector, right, the industry sector where the organization is, depending on what are its everyday activities, there are different tasks and there are maybe different outputs that the organization is responsible, so then we have different functions. We are not here discussing again about threats because we have already mentioned that topic. So the next thing to know here would be that we should only care, in a sense, about those functions or those assets that we know that they are valuable. So if there's no value perceived for a certain function or a certain asset, then we shouldn't take it into account. So it should either have real value for the others, or let's say from experience, from past experience, let's say, we know that the attackers are going for this. So we know that the attackers are going to target this asset we have, this system, this database, or this function that we have, based on the overall goals and based on what we are, let's say, promising to our customers or to our end users. And of course, then, in order to make sure that we are doing the right thing, we also need to know about all the vulnerabilities that are currently existing in our systems or that could be maybe introduced later on, based on the different sources that are around, right? Yes. Now, this is another image from the book, which is in Norwegian, but I can quickly introduce it for all of you. So first of all, we have this, it's called Schleife diagram, which I don't really know the term in English, and I don't think it's easy to explain, but in a sense, we have this threats on the left here, and then you have the assets on the right. So it's like this is a chart or this is an image which is trying to show how the different threats coming from different threat actors. You have threat actor one, outside state, threat actor two, inside threat, threat actor three, operators from the from outside, and threat actor four, other unauthorized actors. And then, so how the threats will affect the assets here. And we have different assets. The example here from the book is about the health care system. So in a sense, how the different threat actors here could affect the healthcare system in the different assets they consider as relevant. In the middle, you have what could happen as undesirable event or breach in functionality. And the example is that the unauthorized users, the outsiders in general, would have access to the patient data. You have, before the threat gets actual, gets real, the systems in use have already some inbuilt measures in order to reduce the probability of these threats being real. Even though they are somehow successful in partially reducing this, the threat is still there. It will be real, but of course the effect should be a bit, the probability would be lower, and then this would help the whole risk framework that we already mentioned. On the other side, you have these barriers which are trying to reduce the consequence effect of the threat being real. So on this side, you have measures reducing the probability. On that side, you have measures reducing the consequence effect. These two below are the different vulnerabilities that are available, which the threat actors would exploit in order to attack the system. And then there's also this insecurity, which could be maybe framed a bit better, but in a sense it's all that part that we are not able to calculate, that we are not able to know about the threat actors, about the vulnerabilities, and about the consequences that these threats could have to the system and to the assets that we have. This is briefly the image here, and this is how it could be explained somehow. So that's also highly related to the risk part that we're discussing. And then, for example, the breaches could be in confidentiality, undesirable insights or access to the system, availability, when the employees are missing access to that's relevant for the health personnel, integrity, there might be consequences in regards to changing patient information, and of course there could be some more consequences when it comes to flaws in the management process, and then there could be, of course, if the system is not working, there could be consequences on the people that are sick or much worse. So how should we define risk assessment? Risk assessment is about mapping, it's in Norwegian is kartlegging, so it's mapping and assessing what could threaten the business, and also assessing the consequences that this could have. So again, we have the assessing the threats, the left side from the image, and assessing the consequence, the right side. Okay. Then, in order to proceed with the risk assessment part, there are some general steps. First of all, it should always start with system description, and we can explain it a bit later. So we have a system in hand, we own this system, and we want to understand how risky is using this system for our organization as a whole. And we should be able then, this is very important, this is the first step, but it's very, very important, so it doesn't mean that we should avoid it, or it doesn't mean that we shouldn't put much effort on it. This is where it starts, and we should be able here to describe all the different parts of the system that are important for our analysis further. Then once the system is described, we should understand and describe how we are collecting information, where is it, and also the method used. We should describe the different threats, the different scenarios. We talked about worst-case scenarios or unwanted, undesirable events that might affect the system. We should describe the consequences. So once again, the left and then the right side. Or how could these consequences be categorized if we don't really, if we cannot really address all of them? Then we at least should describe the category under which they could fall, like reputation, like loss of financial sources, and so on and so on. Vulnerability, we should assess the vulnerabilities that are part of the system and have an overview about how could these be addressed. And finally, the description of what should be the different measures that we should take for reducing the risk that could come from different perspectives, right? Now, system description, it's mostly related to this image. First of all, map and describe all the human, technical, and organizational elements in the system. Map and describe all the system's main functional abilities, which is like, what are the main functions of the system? And this is what we are discussing today. And then also map and describe the assets. What is the system dependent on in order to make sure the outputs are delivered as expected? And this is also something that could be part of the exercise that we will discuss on Friday. As an example from the book, again, I mentioned it's about the health system. So, first of all, what could be the assets? Usually, this is a whole process, and we're not here to discuss everything, but then, of course, there are different assets that the healthcare industry or healthcare organization should worry about. But let's say, in terms of severity or in terms of relevance to a certain number of people, it should be mostly about information. So all the information stored in the patient data system, I'm not sure if that there's a name for the Norwegian context, but then yeah. All this information should be the most important asset. At least, yeah. Mission? Yeah, okay. So, in this case, all the information stored in the system should be the most important asset for the healthcare department, the healthcare authorities, the health system overall. And then, in this case, we have all the patient's data, all the data and the information that the administration would use, the healthcare administration would use, and then all the possible research data that are related to the system and how they could be exploited from the outsiders. And then, in this case, what's the main function of the health system? Is to provide healthcare, right? To make sure that the people that are part or related to the system are being healthy enough. And then how should we protect the information? How should we protect this asset? We should try to prioritize which would be the most relevant areas to protect. We saw from the image there that there were different threats and then multiple consequences, and then there was something about confidentiality, something about availability, something about integrity, and so on. And then, based on all these different consequences and scenarios that should be analyzed, the most relevant aspect of it should be availability. So, you know what happened to the UK's healthcare service a few years ago? The NHS was not able to provide information to the hospitals because there was an attack, and then there was the risk, the actual risk of someone dying in the process. And so availability should be amongst before everything else. So the information should be always available to the ones that need it. And then this should be the target or goal number one for the ongoing risk analysis. And then I would like to, I think the registration is over now. So I will stop it here. In the meantime, we can have a break, and then if you are free enough during the break, you can also use your time to fill out the Studiebarometer, and this is for all the students that started in 2021. All the students, especially I think B data, but also there could be someone from the others. You should be able to find this email in your account, and then I'm part of the, as a study program responsible, I think this is very important. And so as a teacher for BData and for the other programs here, I would like you to go further and start filling it out. I think also the economic students are having this email. So please do this during the break. We'll meet again in 50 minutes or so. Thank you. Okay. Then, sorry. Then I think it's time to start. Second hour. Guys, can we start? Yeah. So I also added the questions or comments button here in case anyone had some questions from the first hour. We can take them now, or we can take them in the end. Okay, then again, maybe we need a few minutes for those questions, but I can continue as well. So the topic today is about risk assessment. Yes. And you're not writing this question here. Okay. This is not you writing the question. No? Okay. Yes. You answered it yourself because you said, is it a great risk protecting something with no value? Then I mentioned that if something, according to what you have experienced so far, or according to, let's say, the different sources, if something has no value for someone outside your organization or someone else rather than you as individual, then it's not worthy protecting it. Because that's part of the formula, which I will explain a bit later, but was also somehow explained already. So it's like, depending on the value of the specific asset, then we can discuss and decide if we have to protect or not, if we need to protect or not. So that's how, in a sense, you don't need to really protect everything, and you don't have to protect those assets that don't mean a lot for the organization or related to the functions, because we're talking about functions and so on. So yeah, no value means no reason to protect it, no risk. A question here from someone. When do you do risk assessment? You do risk assessment whenever you have something that you think is valuable and which could be compromised, which could be accessed from someone unauthorized. And in case it's accessed from someone unauthorized, then you could lose your asset, you could lose your reputation, there could be different consequences. So that's when you start doing risk assessment. This is the short answer. The long answer would be, you always have to do risk assessment. Especially if you're part of an organization, there should always be this ongoing thinking about something that could happen and some assets that could be vulnerable. And how could we protect those assets? It's a cycle. So yeah, you should always do risk assessment, especially when there are assets that are highly valuable and that could affect the organization or yourself as an individual if losing them, or if they are like corrupted or partially damaged and so on. Okay, I'm clicking this and answered, and for the moment, sorry, I'm disabling questions for the moment, and I will activate them again later. So function-based risk assessment. We talked about functions, we talked about risk assessment, and then function-based risk assessment is just the process of assessing the vulnerabilities and the threats that are related to the specific functions. So it's like, first of all, we should understand what are the functions that we are responsible or the organization is responsible for. Then we should identify the specific vulnerabilities in the system that could be, that if exploited later and turned into threats, they could be, undesirable events, they could be preventing, delaying, or interfering the organization while performing specific functions. So that's the definition. And then, of course, this is not just something which is mentioned in the book and then something that you can maybe understand right now, but then it loses its relevance. This is already supported from multiple sources, both national and international. You have Justice Department, you have Forsvar, so you have the Minister of Justice, you have the Minister of Defense, Military, you have the the intelligence agency, and then you also have NATO on the international level, which is supporting the way how risk assessment should be done these times. It should always relate to the specific functions. That's the best approach. And then, as we mentioned before, this is also the same here. We should always start with the system description, understanding all the different functions and how are the different vulnerabilities or potential threats related to it. And then, what are the relevant functions for the organization? And how this should be produced, maintained, and restored? And who should need these outputs or tasks that the organization is responsible for? Now, resilience. This is also something which is relevant. And this is part of the book chapter. It's in Norwegian, but it's like trying to ask the students about finding a good definition of resilience in relation to the context that we are now discussing that could be well functional for a risk assessment process. And then, since the book is asking the students about this, I'm doing that as well. So if you have already heard of resilience, or if you maybe had a quick look through the slides that I uploaded yesterday, you could maybe have an idea about what resilience is or how it's related to the risk topic that we are discussing today. So feel free to write your own definition, and then we can discuss it further. To have his independent definition, so that's why I'm hiding the results before they get too similar. The winner is, systems, ability to restore functionality, good. Someone doesn't know, that's also okay. Not equal to vulnerability, right? How well the organization can withstand attacks. Resilience is resilience, thank you. Ability to recover after an incident. Measure of keeping integrity. That's also a partial answer. How difficult it is to access assets. Systems hard to crack. Ability to deal with threats, usually time before breaking down. Capability to resist. Yes. In this case, resilience after being successful breach, before and after. Capacity to recover quickly. Toughness. Yeah. So actually, this is an answer in a sense that there are different definitions based on the context and what you are primarily concerned about. And then the definition for the context that we are discussing is also related to what was described in the book that says resilience is defined as the ability of a system to maintain or restore the functionality of this, of itself after exposed to a specific risk or event. And of course, this is one definition which is already, I think, supported from the Norwegian authorities, but at the same time, it doesn't really fit in all cases. But it's a good definition. And then we could still have this discussion further because resilience is something that it's not recent, but it's still new in a sense. It has been a buzzword since 20 years or so. There have been different tons of papers and reports and work related to resilience, multiple definitions across several sectors and also individual companies. And then there was also this recent project, which is mentioned in the book, and they have also tried to define resilience, not with a single paragraph or single sentence, but based on a whole methodology. And if you're curious, the methodology and relationship to resilience is shown in this picture, where you have risk assessment, prevention, preparation, Varschling, which is awareness or making people notifying. There's no better word in English, I guess. Response, recovering, learning. And somewhere in the prevention, there's also resilient design. But somehow is related to more than those aspects. So anyway, so you have here the CIRI methodology and the seven general indicators and different sub-indicators. Yes, and with the resilience and its definition, I would like to jump to the other part of the lecture, which is an extended version of the risk topic, not just what's covered from the book, but also something more. And in response to the questions, to the question written, when do you do risk assessment, another answer would be somewhere in the risk management process. So risk assessment is a part of the overall risk management process, where we have three main stages. First of all, risk identification, which is where we should be able to identify all the risks related to our organization or maybe a specific system. It depends how the process is done within the organization. And then, once all the risks are identified, then we go further with the risk assessment part, which is what we talked about until now, which is like try to calculate the different values according to the information we have, and then try to understand which ones could be the most vulnerable assets. And then the last part is the risk control, where based on the values we have from the second stage, which is risk assessment, we should now try to decide, and this should be of course from the management side in the end, but then we should maybe suggest them the way forward by providing them different strategies based on the different levels of risk for each of these cases. So I'm not going to further details here because this should be another lecture then, but I'm also trying to introduce and explain some concepts that could be very much relevant here. When we are dealing with identifying risks, prioritizing the different assets and how we should protect them, and then decide what should we do about this in the control phase, then we should also have something else in mind. What are we willing to accept as potential risk, which we should still tolerate in our everyday activities? This is where the risk appetite concept arises, and this is all about defining the quantity and maybe type or nature of the level of risk which could be accepted from the organization, while we are trying to balance a bit the trade-off between perfect security, so we have to have 100% secure systems, and full accessibility, which is like all the employees should have access and all the needed information anytime. This is known also as risk tolerance. So it's like, how much risk tolerant are we as part of the organization, or maybe as individuals for our own assets? And then the next concept that should be relevant here is, whenever we need to define a certain strategy about the asset that is going to be analyzed, we should also think about the total value of risk that's related to it. And the total value of risk that's related to it is somehow explained from this image here, which is not, which I think is self-explanatory, but I can as well explain. So, this is the whole risk, let's say, that we have calculated for the specific asset. Now what happens? If you remember the image that we showed in the first hour, there were some measures which were trying to reduce the probability and some measures trying to reduce the consequence. Okay? So, this is the amount of vulnerabilities reduced from the different measures, which this is like the probability side. This is the amount of threat now, actual, reduced from the measures, and that's like the right side, the consequence. Now, because of the measures taken, some asset value had to be reduced. In a sense, like, for example, we could have a new system, but some of its functionality could be risky enough that we should get rid of it. Okay? And that's where this part would be reduced, because it's not safe. It's too risky for the organization to keep having that part. And then from the whole risk value that we calculated in the risk assessment stage, this part here is the so-called residual risk. The risk value that's specific for that asset after all these measures have been taken. So we had the concept of risk appetite, and now we have the concept of residual risk. Now, okay, this is the formula, or somehow what I explained so far. So first of all, it's a combination of the threat minus the effect of threat reducing measures, the vulnerability in the beginning minus the effect of vulnerability reducing measures, and then the asset minus the effect of asset reducing measures. The three parts make up for the residual risk that is related to this asset based on the specific vulnerability and the threat related to it. And why is this important? Because as long as we know the value of the risk related to a specific asset based on this, and as long as we know what is the value of risk appetite that the company has, that us as individuals have, then we can decide if we are going to keep it or not. If we are going to go further with the asset, if we are going to maybe have it for another round and then try to analyze it again next year based on new challenges, new vulnerabilities, and so on. It will always be kept as long as the risk, which is the residual part of it, will be lower or equal to the risk tolerance or risk appetite part. As long as the company accepts that level of risk, we're fine. We can keep that asset. Everything is okay. If it's not there, then we have to terminate, or we have to sell the asset, or we have to do something else. And this is the general formula, in a sense, of risk. We talked about the likelihood, some of you mentioned it. We talked about the asset value, which should be relevant for this analysis. And then this is the total risk value. Then from this, we differentiate all the reducing part, like what's reduced from the vulnerability side, threat side, asset side, based on the controls that we have in our organization or us as individuals. And finally, because we are allowed to not have all the information we need, we should also add that uncertainty part. Based on those values now that are taken from the risk assessment phase, risk control deals with the strategy forward. What should we do with a given asset based on the risk level that we know so far? First of all, we could still defend it, or we could try the risk defense strategy. We could then say that the asset has some vulnerabilities, we should try to minimize their effect, and then it should be fine. That's how you defend the asset. You have it, you protect it, you keep it. Then, if we're not able to control it in this way, to control the level of risk for this asset in this way, before going further and maybe having more severe consequences, we should try and transfer it. Or we should use this risk transfer strategy, which is like, if something is out of control in this part, it's better if we give it to someone else, or it's better if we share this responsibility with some other parties which could be better at this, and then there could be maybe less risk related to that because we are transferring it. Further on, the other strategy would be, we have this asset now. We know that there are some vulnerability related to it, and there will be something exploited from the outsiders based on it. Then we should try to minimize the consequence. And that's the risk mitigation strategy. So we are now on the other side of the image from the first hour, on the right side. Now we are trying to undertake measures that should help mitigating the risk that we will face. Then, after this, if the asset is still good to go, so we can still keep it in a sense, we can accept the risk because the value which is associated with it is lower than the risk appetite, than the risk tolerance. So we just accept the risk and own the asset further. And then the final strategy would be terminate. If the size of the, if the level of risk related to a certain asset is high enough that we cannot accept it, then we should just terminate. We should be done with using the system. We should not use the technology. We should not hold that asset, and so on. These are the different options, the different strategies that the risk management team should offer to the management side in order to decide further. Now I have a few more minutes here. And I left this actually on purpose for the end because I didn't want to skip the previous slides from this. So now here I'm giving you two examples of how we can calculate risk for a certain asset. And that's like based on how much information we have. This example is related, or is, about a case or a scenario where we have information about the likelihood of the vulnerability in a certain asset, and then information about the value of the asset, information about the current controls in place, and something about uncertainty, which is basically it was a bit long ago. It's the image, the formula, right? So it's asset value multiplied by the likelihood, and then we subtract the controls, the reducing of the values based on the controls we have, and then we add the uncertainty. Okay? In this case, we have two vulnerabilities for the same asset. One of them has a likelihood of 0.5, which is somehow, it happens once every 2 years, we can say. Okay? So if it happens once every 2 years, then maybe it will happen this year or not, but then the next year should happen, if not this year. And then the other vulnerability has a lower likelihood, which is like once every 10 years. Okay? So then it's not that it doesn't happen that often, but then it still has some effect. The first vulnerability, because it happens so often, we have already controls in place that are able to reduce 50% of the effect based on the data that we have. On the other hand, the other vulnerability is not that usual, so then we don't usually have controls. It's like the case that we talked, which is close to zero, but yeah. Now, all we know so far could be also not certain, because we don't know everything for sure, and there could be some 20% of uncertainty. Okay, so this information is 80% accurate. We are not 100% sure that we know everything. So then there's this uncertainty aspect. So how do we calculate now the risk here? First of all, related to the first vulnerability, and then second vulnerability. I forgot to mention the value of the asset, which was there. I can go back quickly. 50, and this is not like real money, but it's like if you would have to rate this asset from 0 to 100, how much valuable would it be? Then the organization, those who are related to this, they answered it's 50. It's like average value. It's not too low, not too high, but it's there. So based on that, there's the formula. What's the risk related to the first vulnerability? We have the asset value, we have the likelihood, and then we subtract the control reducing measures, the effect from them, and then we add the uncertainty. And based on the calculation, it's like 17.75. And then the risk for the second vulnerability, which had a likelihood of 0.1, would have, this should be 0.5, 0.1 here, but it's still zero in a sense. So, yeah, there's no change in the value. And then the value is 6.25. Okay? So we have two vulnerabilities. Same asset, different risk levels. Now, if there were more assets and more vulnerabilities, or if you were asked to choose one vulnerability that would be the most severe here, you would have to choose number one. So that's like it. In a sense, the higher the value of the risk, of course, the more we should address it and take it into account, and then probably do something about it. So this is when you have such information as asset value, likelihood of vulnerability, controls in place, and then uncertainty also. Now, what's the time now? Okay. Now, what if we had more information, more detailed information? Now we talk about some other concepts, such as loss frequency. In this case, we know about the likelihood, and we also know about the attack success probability. So we know that if there's an attack related to this vulnerability, that's the attack success ratio. And with these in mind, we can calculate the so-called annual rate of occurrence, ARO. Then, we can also calculate loss magnitude, which is asset loss magnitude, right? And then we have asset value, which we had already before. And then we have probable loss. So how much, what's the part of the asset that would be lost from this attack? Which makes for single loss expectancy. So now we have a few more details that we could use in the formula that we have for the risk assessment part. So then we have another example. There is an estimate for this that there could be one attack every 10 years, likelihood. If attack, 50% chance of attack success. We have that for the loss frequency. Then it's the value, again 50, we could have another value for sure. Expectations show that 100% of the asset is lost from the attack, and all these assumptions are 90% accurate, so there's some uncertainty there. Solution, we have annual rate of occurrence multiplied by the single loss expectancy, and then we add the uncertainty. So we have likelihood, we have attack success chance, we have asset value, we have loss percentage of asset loss based on the certain attack. And all of this, we also add the uncertainty part. The total value is 2.75. And then if someone asks, what should we do with this? Then the answer would be, we don't know what's the risk tolerance for the organization. So if the risk tolerance is 5, then it's fine. This asset is okay. We can still keep it, and we can accept the level of risk. But if the risk tolerance, based on the function that it has, based on the organization, the industry, if the risk tolerance is 0.0, I don't know, then we shouldn't, right? So that's how you understand what's the relevance of these values and how we can relate it to the given context. So thank you. That was it for today. There are some parts in the chapter that I didn't discuss here today. There's something about standards, like how is risk assessment standardized today? Of course, there are different standards. There are local standards, international standards. And then also there was a part about critical functions, which is like how do we define critical function? And it's also like a local context, because actually I think when it comes to critical functions, as with the other definitions that we meant so far, there are different definitions based on local context, regional context, and so on. So this is something that I didn't explain from the book, but I think the most important part of the topic is in the lecture. There will be labs on Friday. I will make sure for organizing and preparing another Kahoot session, and I hope that most of you will be there to try it. And there should be also time for the groups to deal with the project tasks. Next week, there should be a topic around human aspects. We can then discuss on Friday if we can still have a lecture like this, or maybe use some recordings, or maybe so that you can maybe use the lecture slot for your own tasks in the course. And then, as I mentioned in the during the break, there's the Studio Bell matter for all the students starting in 2021. And also 2020, I think, for some programs. Yeah. Good. Quickly, if you have some concepts that were interesting and new enough for you to put here. But that's fine then. Questions? More questions? And I think I'm still on for the remote students. There should be another 2 minutes or so. So this is the time to ask for questions, and I put again this Studio Barometer in the background. Yeah. I had a question from one of the students in the first row in the break. Exam. Yes. The plan is that we should be uploading very soon a sample exam, we call it, which is like a typical exam that should be similar to the one you will have in December. Then I can also give some brief details. So we will have both multiple choice questions and open questions, which is like you should both be able to choose one option in 15 questions, let's say, and then for the rest of them you should try to describe a bit more in general what's the answer for the question itself. There will probably also be part of it with Linux. Yeah, you asked it, right? Yeah. Yeah, there should be also some part of Linux there. Some commands, something which is like, okay, fill the blank maybe, or yeah, something like that. But then again, I have to discuss with Kelly. From my part, I don't usually use fill the blanks or so. Yeah? Yeah, so